Welcome to Jaguars This Week.
Jaguars This Week.
Presented by Aetna. With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton.
And Tony Bissell.
Color analyst, Jeff Lagerman.
And Tony Bissell.
And Jaguars.com senior writer, John Osher.
And Tony Bissell.
Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Sonny's Barbecue, Wells Fargo, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank.
Jaguars This Week begins right now.
All right, here we go. Jaguars This Week, officially into the dead zone, that time where there's really not much going on. Rookies are here, but the coaches are gone. Rookies will be here through the end of the month, and then it's really quiet until training camp opens. That's the bad news. Good news is we're not that far. Just a little more than a month away from training camp opening, and you know the season is not far behind. Brian Sexton with you. Tony Boselli is here. Joe Fortunato taking your calls, questions, and comments. We may see Jeff Loggeman in the building this evening. I'm told he's here, but...
I saw him.
Okay. Well, it's unlike him to be like Ozone and stroll in.
Yeah, he's late.
Randomly. But, hey, there must be a reason why.
There'll be a fine.
So, today, the news is that Marcus Stroud signs a one-day contract to retire as a Jaguar. And three-time Pro Bowler, you know, one of those guys that will long be known. He and his partner in John Henderson were the heartbeat of that defense for a couple of years under Jack Del Rio when it was really good. My thought is Stroud's the second-best defensive tackle to ever play in Jacksonville.
Who do you think is the best?
The same guy you think, Gary Walker.
Yeah, Gary was dominant. He was mean. Dominant, tough, played with an attitude,
yep.
And played hard every time he was on the field. I mean, the biggest thing, you know, you remember Gary is just the attitude.
Yeah.
Well, he was a nasty.
Yeah,
nasty,
he was.
Nasty disposition.
And Stroud wasn't. That's not to say Stroud didn't play nasty.
No, and Stroud was an outstanding player.
Outstanding
player.
He's the only defensive tackle to go to three Pro Bowls. You know, John went to one. I don't know that Gary ever made a Pro Bowl.
He did one year.
Oh, that, right. 99, the year that that everybody on that defense went to the Pro Bowl.
I think Stroud was probably better longer for the period. But
his ankle went in 07, yeah. And it cut short a career that would have been multiple more Pro Bowls.
Sure. He was an outstanding player, dominant when he was on the field. Numbers probably don't do justice to the type of impact he had on games. And I think we forget because there weren't great teams back then,
right?
But great defenses.
Yes.
And they were great defenses for really two reasons. One was John Henderson, and one was Marcus Stroud.
Well, and that 04 defense, you know, Del Rio used to have a picture in his office of the Buccaneers game. It was a Sunday night game, back before the Sunday night game was the prime game. And all 11 Jaguars were in the photo swarming to the Buccaneers the running back, I forget who it was, in 04. And he was really proud of that photo, and leading the way was Marcus Stroud. And, you know, it was 7 or 8 yards down the field, and he was there. He was leading the way to the back. That's the way I'll always remember him, is the way that he ran to the ball more than the way that he, you know, pushed the pocket or anything like that. He trailed down the line, and he made plays that most defensive linemen didn't.
Yeah, he's sideline to sideline guy, great athlete, very, very physical. Big, strong, and he could impose his will physically when he wanted to, but it was the athletic ability, I think, that set him apart.
Does he belong in the ring, in the pride with you?
You know,
and Fred? Would he be the first defender to belong? Because, look, if we're going to talk about Mark and Jimmy, you know, being potential guys there as well,
that might be the hardest question you ever get, anytime, anywhere.
And this is how I answer it.
Okay.
I'm not going to answer it. I don't answer that question because I got too many guys I played with that I've friends. I'm biased.
Well, I'm not asking you to put him in front of anybody.
I don't comment on who should be up there and who shouldn't. It's not my job.
Is that a policy that you just thought up right now?
No, I don't.
Because it looks like it.
No, I typically do not talk about who I think should be up there and who shouldn't because that's not my job. I mean, I'm not on a committee. I'm up there. I'm proud to be up there. If they put Marcus Stroud up there, I'd be.
Here's Logs. Or is that John Osher?
Oh, hey.
Hey, Logs.
The show started 5 minutes ago.
And I need you. And I need you because we're talking Marcus Stroud. And you were here for the majority of Stroud's career watching him.
Yeah.
So.
Love him.
Yep. Now, here's my question. Is he the best defensive tackle the Jaguars ever had?
Yes.
Okay. See, we said Gary Walker.
No. Gary would tell you that he was.
Yeah.
Well, that's for sure. Now, I think different players, though, I mean, consistently year in and year out.
Well, that's what I said. I said over a longer period of time, Stroud was better. But I think that 99 year that Gary Walker had was probably the best year a defensive tackle had.
I'd argue against you on that a little bit.
Look at the sack numbers. Look at the – I mean, Gary Walker was
– That was a 10-sack season.
Gary Walker was dominant that year.
No, he was great. I mean –
I'm not saying.
Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, I'm just saying. If
two,
you look at
two
one
great
year,
great players.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I agree with you. If you looked at one year, yes, Gary.
He's
Walker.
The best defense. I mean, the guy. Whoever.
But you put 4 years, a 4 year window, because that's what how long Gary that was. He was here for a 4 year window.
And you compared it. Stroud would.
Even though Stroud had a bigger window, but you since Gary was here for four or whatever, you took that and said, okay, give me a 4 year window of Marcus. I'll take Marcus.
All right. The other reason.
So maybe the best. Maybe the best way to say it is, the best. Defensive tackle, the best year by a defensive tackle ever in the history of this franchise was Gary Walker.
1 year, yes. And if you count it into the equation as far as the quality of the guy and leadership in the locker room.
There's no doubt.
Hands down, it's not even close. You take Marcus Stroud.
Gary can be a little bit of a problem in the locker room.
You think?
Well, here's the other reason why.
I was in Houston with him, too.
Yeah.
One of the reasons that I remember... and I think of Gary being that stout point of attack guy, and that wasn't really Marcus's style. He was more of a sideline to sideline
guy. Gary was a better pass rusher, too. Gary was a very, very good pass rusher from the three technique.
Mm-hmm. He was good. He was good. But, I mean, as far as running the field.
Oh, athletically.
Eating up
Stroud,
two blocks every time.
Stroud was great.
You know, and still making plays. You know, it was probably, I mean, I didn't appreciate probably, I think I did. But when Marcus and John Henderson were at their best, I mean, they were, you know, they call people, okay, two-gap tackles. I mean, these guys were truly, you know, three- and four-gap tackles, which means that if there was any back that decided to run on either side of either one of them, it wasn't going there.
Well, I said this. I said, and I think we forget because the team wasn't very good, but that was one of the best defenses in the entire NFL, mm-hmm. and for two reasons, Marcus Stroud and John Henderson.
They set everything up. You can choose, you know. Now, here's the question that Tony just came up with a policy that he will not.
No, I did not just come up with it. I just said I don't.
I think
I'm
he
not
did.
Gonna come.
I'm just kidding. He came up with a policy.
Don't kid. Be serious with him.
That that he does not comment on whether players belong in the pride of the Jaguars or not. So I'm asking you, is he the first defensive player that might be there one day? Jaguars player. You got, I mean, Brackens and Kevin Hardy, and you could make a case. Rasheen Mathis at some point.
It's a good question.
See, I told you it was a good question.
I didn't say it wasn't a good question. I just said I'm not going to get into it.
Do I think that he would be the first? No.
Okay.
I've got somebody else in mind that I think is very deserving.
Sure.
Let
me ask you this.
A couple of them.
I'll ask you this way. Who's the best defensive player to ever play for the Jaguars?
I mean, to me, there's two guys.
Okay, who are they?
Three guys. Three guys that you can make a case for. Darryl Smith. Rasheen Mathis, Tony Brackens.
I would have put. I'd say, and I wasn't thinking. And I wasn't thinking Rasheen. I don't know why I wasn't, but I was thinking Darryl Smith, Tony Brackens.
You know, and I've got. You know, when Johnny O and I think Jaguars.com has got the top Jaguar.
The Rasheen would be in
history.
There too. Rasheen's the top.
I shouldn't have done that because you were late.
Yeah,
well, I wasn't.
Rasheen's
late.
One of the best. I mean, Rasheen.
I had Rasheen in the top 10. I think I had him fifth.
Yeah, I got Rasheen real high.
I'd have Rasheen high, and I'd have Darryl very high.
But Darryl,
I
have a tendency to rank a guy higher when he's done it for such a long time and played at a high level
so
for a
underrated.
Long time, and you're consistent year in and year out. I put more of a premium on that versus a guy who had, you know, a Pro Bowl season or two Pro Bowl seasons or one magical season. I think the ability to do it consistently for multiple years, I think, is harder to do than anything. And so for that, what Darryl Smith is doing, what Rasheen has been able to do, the number of picks that Rasheen has—I mean, those, boy, that Tony Bracken's just the pure of, you know, from a number standpoint, in a way he could change a game. But you know, with Tony Brackens, there is a level of disappointment somewhat, because Tony, I think, would agree with this, and we've talked about this before. You expected so much more out of a Tony Brackens. I mean, because you knew that he had the abilities to be a 15-sack-a-year guy. But he's never one of those guys that you hung around him and you said, he's all in. You know, he's totally committed. He loves the game. It's what he's all about.
That was never Tony. You know, with Daryl Smith, with Rasheen, you get more of a feel that, I mean, it's really important to these guys, especially Daryl. I mean, because he shows up every week and every year.
And I think with Brackens, it was, I think he was, I mean, he was committed. I mean, he played hard. I mean, but if I had any critique of Tony Brackens, if
you expected more.
If it didn't go well early in a game, he could just play.
But you just expected more out of Tony.
And you hated it because you knew that if he, when he wanted to, that he was maybe as hard to block as anybody.
In 1996, which was Tony's first year, I'll never forget me and Clyde Simmons talking. And this was, you know, this was like within a day or two of us in pads, you know, having to see Tony Brackens firsthand do things. And Clyde and I had the conversation, and we're talking about Tony, and we're just like, wow, you know, how good can he be? And I remember Clyde, and Clyde was kind of somewhat of a wordsmith. You know, he's kind of that wise old man. He kind of had that appeal, I guess you could say, to guys. And I think Clyde said it best. He said, Tony Brackens is going to be as good as Tony Brackens wants to be.
I agree.
And not that he didn't want to be good, but I think the really great ones want to be great. You know, Ronnie Lott's, the Art Monks, you know, the Peyton Mannings.
Well, you know what it speaks to, Jeff, is the great players, it's more than just having great ability. There's a mentality and a mindset that goes with, because you can be a good player with great ability. Like Tony Brackens, good defensive end with off-the-charts ability. But that's why I think you have to appreciate the truly great players, because they have that ability plus the mindset, the work ethic. I mean, it all has to come together.
It's all
to be great.
Together.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Jaguars This Week. And the Jaguars are going to host their second annual movie night right here at Everbank Field with a showing of Friday Night Lights this Friday, June 22nd. It's also going to be an opportunity to select a seat for the 2012 season. Gates going to open at 6 o'clock. You can check out available seats until the movie starts around 8 o'clock. And in addition to the movie and the Select a Seat event, there's going to be interactive games, the Roar, alumni players, D-Line, Jackson DeVille. The event and parking are free, all open to the public. For more information, yes, Mr. Lager.
That's this Friday, and the movie is?
Friday Night Lights.
It's the football movie, right?
Yep. Good stuff.
If it was a scary movie, would you come and hold my hand?
I'd hold your hand anyway. I like you, but you're late, and don't try and get around that.
That's true.
Should be a fine. Put money in the box. By the way, you want to know more? Just check out Jaguars.com, or you can call the Jaguars, 633-2000.
Was handed these numbers probably an hour ago, that the Jaguars' renewal rate, 86% in tickets. Pretty good. And they have sold 5,440 new season tickets as of today, and the target is 10,000. So
got a lot of work to go still.
But what did I hear that the number was that they'd probably finish this month ahead of where they were all of last season, with July still in front of them to be able to go and attack it?
That'd be strong.
Yeah. So that's
good schedule, man. Yeah. It's a good schedule too. A lot of excitement, new staff, you know, and new approach, you know, new ownership. I mean, there's a lot of reason to be excited, and I'm looking forward to this year. In fact, you know how it is. You know, you talk about different people that you know in the community, you just see. And yet today I was at Sam's Club over there on Youngerman Circle talking to my lady in the back. And, man, she's just excited. She's got five season tickets.
Which lady is that? You have multiple ladies?
Well, I don't want to point out any names. You know, there's no reason to get specific.
I'm giving you
she knows time. Who she is. She's got five season tickets.
Do you want to say what
department
she works in?
No.
Okay. Okay.
It's got to be the bakery.
It's something to do with food.
Like cheesecake, maybe.
But she's so excited, she's excited. And that's the attitude that's all around town, and I am too, you know.
I don't know what made me think of this. Tickets and food, they kind of came together. Preseason games. What are the away games this year?
At Baltimore and at New Orleans.
Crabs.
We are going to be eating good, boys. Tell New Orleans get ready because
crab cakes and crabs and
what was
Baltimore.
The name of that place we went that one year that was sort
in
of
in Baltimore?
Yeah, with your buddy. It was a quiet
with
little
Brother
place.
Love?
It was a quiet little place you would never have.
I got a couple good places in Baltimore. I go up there quite a bit.
I've been to a couple different places in Baltimore with Brother Love.
But you remember the one
they all kind of run together.
But he ordered
you
went, he ordered
yeah, we had like
four.
10 orders
well,
of crab cakes.
You sat right
cakes.
Down and ordered. Well, let's have four orders of crab cakes. You're going to order now. No, that's just the appetizers. Well, so, you know, each crab cake, you know, is each appetizer is one crab cake. He goes, well, you
bring look, just bring them, okay?
Yeah. So we ended up ordering the $30 entree as appetizers.
Well,
it was great.
I'll just say this.
We ate.
If you think.
Like fat rats.
If you think the Anchor Bar was a display of gluttony.
Of pigness, pigness, by you, yeah.
Wait to New Orleans.
Are you going to be able to do it?
Oh, why wouldn't I?
Just making sure.
Have I ever disappointed in the food category?
Not that, not to the best of my knowledge.
Although
no.
I think I out-ate you at the Anchor Bar.
You were
off your game.
No, you did
no.
not.
I buried him. I left him in the dust.
That's why we walked all the way back to the hotel.
Yeah, I had to roll back almost. He but anyway, I don't know what made me think about food, tickets, games coming up. I look forward to one of my favorite parts of the year is preseason when we all get to go on the road together.
And eating like fat rats.
Those are two good road trips, though.
Yeah. Oh, New Orleans
beautiful.
Particular.
You know, because, you know, people are saying, well, why is preseason such a big deal? When we travel, you know, you're traveling the day before, and so then you have the day of the game to do nothing. You know, so you got the night before and the day of. And so you want to have a city that's
good place.
That's a good place to go and see things. And, you know, with Baltimore, I remember as a kid growing up, Baltimore was just an absolute cesspool.
Not anymore.
And not anymore. The Inner Harbor, downtown Baltimore is absolutely gorgeous. The food
They've
is
done
great.
Done a great job.
I mean, if anybody ever wanted to really model a city after a city that's had great success
Been
in
rehabbed.
Coming out, absolutely Baltimore is it.
And they're a model franchise, too. I mean, ever since they moved there. I mean, they had a couple of rough years before Brian Billick took over and got things going.
Well, yeah, but, you know, sticking just to the city-specific just for a minute, I hope that Jacksonville can get to where Baltimore's Inner Harbor is with the waterfront and everything. Because, I mean, we have a wonderful
We have great assets.
In the St. John's River here, I mean, I would love to see downtown Jacksonville be like what Baltimore has become. A lot of people say, you can't do it. Hey, look.
Go back and look what Baltimore was.
If you had seen what Baltimore used to look like back in the late 70s and 80s, you would have been going, there's no way that this city can make a transformation, and it did.
Yeah, I look forward to it. It's the only time I travel every week, but it's the only time we all get to travel for during the preseason.
We got about a minute and a half before we break for news, and since we're on the theme, where do you like to eat in New Orleans?
Well, I will be going to breakfast
at Cafe Du Monde?
No, at Mother's.
Tell me about it, because I'm a breakfast guy.
Mother's? You've never been to Mother's right there?
It's, no.
I don't know where we stay, but if we stay anywhere near kind of the downtown.
We did last time.
Yeah. It's a hole in the wall. Has the best po' boys if you want to go to lunch there. So we can go to. I'm going to go to breakfast and lunch there.
Speak to me in breakfast terms here.
Oh, just biscuits and, I mean, anything you want in large quantities with a lot of, like, the biscuits and gravy and.
Notice he didn't say large quantity. He said large quality, which
quality.
I think was a.
That's
you know,
a new term, large quality.
Yeah, but I think it means something when he talks about food.
It's large and it's
exactly.
Good. And dinner-wise, you can't go wrong. I mean, there's a number of places we go to dinner.
I wish we had a video cam right now to see the smile on your face.
Oh, you don't know how excited I am.
No, I can tell.
I love football season, and I'll take the next 30 seconds to describe why I love football season. Correct. I love it because of the games. I get to go to a different city, watch great football, talk about it, which is a passion. They pay me to do it, which is still – I pinch myself. And I get to go out to eat at a different restaurant every Saturday night. And it's one of the reasons I gain weight as well. But it's
right. There you go.
It's one of the best times of the year.
And see, I'm not much of a New Orleans guy.
Right.
Food-wise.
I've never been out much in New Orleans.
Well, we're going to go eat.
Okay. Well, you're in charge of New Orleans.
I'll get us a restaurant.
But I like some of the smaller cities, too. I mean, the Indianapolises, the Nashvilles. I mean, if I had my druthers, you know, do you have a choice between New York, New Orleans, you know, Washington, D.C., or would you rather have an Indianapolis, a Nashville? I'll take the smaller cities that have class all day long.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying I want to live there or be there or hang out there. New Orleans is just because it's different food than anywhere else in the country. That's why I enjoy it.
You know, the devil resides in New Orleans.
I'm not going to hang out with him. I'm just going to eat.
Come on, boy.
Hey, Joe, you're talking about football camps. I think Joe Collin just did his two-day offense and defensive line camp over at Atlantic Coast.
Yes.
And great thing that Joe does. And some of the coaches went out there. Some of the players went out and talked to some of the high school kids. And it's a big man camp for the offense and defensive linemen. So appreciate Joe going out there, Joe Collin, our defensive line coach, spending some of his own time and helping some of the kids out.
Next time we got to get him in here.
Yeah, it was good.
Andrew,
actually,
go.
Andrew was there. My son was there. So he
is he a rising freshman?
He's a rising freshman. He is going to be at Providence, and he has a chance to start next year. He's a big kid. He's getting big. I can't.
How big is he?
He's somewhere right around 6'3", either just under or just over, right around that area, about 250.
So he likes to eat like his daddy.
Oh, he likes to eat more than his daddy. But he's starting to lift, and he actually likes it. And it's fun as a dad who loves football that he hates practice. We're doing spring. Jeff, you'll appreciate this. He's in spring football. And he goes, Dad, I don't like football. I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, well, this spring football stinks.
I'd agree.
He goes, all you do is practice, and you don't even get to play a game. I said, son, get used to it, because everybody hates it. And guess what? Then you're going to hate training camp, and you're going to want to quit every time training camp comes around. And then when football season starts, you go, oh, this is why I do it. But it's fun as a dad to watch, and him having success makes it fun.
See, I'm a big fan of the camps and stuff. You know, the kids can get exposure.
No, it's great.
For short periods of time, a week or so. I'm not a big fan of year-round sports. You know, having spring football and
You know, in high school, which I was shocked because in Colorado there was no, but in I think Florida might, maybe Florida and Texas are the only two states, or I know Florida, that allows not only spring football, but full pads, spring football, and then they had a game. They played Nice at the end of a month, played Nice in a full four-quarter football game in the end of May.
I've seen them out there practicing. Oh, they go out. It's along
like
Hodges.
It's full.
Yeah,
it's like college.
Yeah, and see, I'm shaking my head. You know, see, to me, kids, and I say kids because that's what they are.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
They need to play different sports and just have exposure to different athletics and enjoy themselves.
Because the vast majority of them are not going to play at the next.
Play lacrosse, do other things besides just football, so you can just be athletic. And then, you know, when the time comes, then it will be time to do something year round.
Well, the good news is I don't know how it is at other high schools. Andrew goes to Providence, and the football coach there, Bobby Rawlson, does a good job of encouraging the kids to play other sports. So
they're
kids
not all like that.
No, but he has kids who play baseball, and they come out to spring around baseball if they can make it. They have kids who play lacrosse. Andrew did track, and he did football around track. So I agree. I don't like the coaches, and there's a lot of coaches in high school that say, you pick one sport. And I just think that's too early to pick one sport because I tell people.
You know the question I would ask the coach that said that? Why?
Well, I'd even go a step further, Jeff. The best thing for me growing up that helped me play football was the fact that I played basketball.
And me playing baseball, hand-eye coordination,
forced me to be athletic, to run, jump, move laterally. What do you do as an offensive lineman?
All of those.
All those things besides jump, but move laterally and run and move, bend your knees.
I have to jump every now and again when you jump over a defender running down the field.
Yeah, I tried to not do
that.
Did
that a couple times. one of them was not so graceful.
I think it's pretty clear that football in Florida and Texas, especially even at the high school level, takes on almost a religious zeal to some people, and it's not – it shouldn't be that way.
But it's not just football. Baseball in this town?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not in the baseball.
Travel baseball. My son plays fall baseball, same thing.
My son plays travel – My son plays travel baseball, my younger one. I'm going there tonight to a game. And he plays three sports, so he plays year-round. But there are kids who are very good at baseball at his age, 13, 14-year-old, that literally play year-round baseball and play 165 games.
Isn't that crazy?
My kids don't play baseball.
And see if
that's a lot of time.
The argument for that is, hey, look, play football. Play soccer. You know,
lacrosse
is
growing, and that's growing.
Do something different.
Makes it's actually healthier for you because the rest of your muscles develop, and you don't get muscles specific or sports specific, which can lead to more injuries. A lot of people believe, and it allows you to be well rounded and more athletic in whatever your favorite sport is. Mm-hmm. And at that age, guess what? If you want to be a great baseball player, go play football and go hit off a tee a couple nights a week after football practice if you feel like you need to get reps. Whatever it is.
And it doesn't even have to be, you know, an organized sport. Take karate.
Yeah.
You know,
your kids do it.
My kid has done it before. I mean,
karate's great.
I mean, those type of things are wonderful. I mean, if they want to do gymnastics, let them do gymnastics.
Do something.
Whatever, something.
There is a plethora of programs that are now coming out for, you know, parents who want their kids to get specific coaching so that they can get good enough to get a college scholarship. And I guess, and I'm not going to name any. You know where they are. I do, too. So my question to you is, you both played this league. You played in major college. You didn't need that. But it's amazing how down here there are specific places where kids go and work out an hour, hour and a half a night all year round so that they are at their peak when football season comes. That, to me, is the part of it that I go, really?
Well, I think you can overdo it. Now, the interesting thing is, and it can be well overdone. Especially when you get to high school, I get that. I tell parents and people all the time, puberty is the great equalizer. And so until these kids go through puberty and fully mature, you really don't know what they are. Because there's some kids who are just smaller before they go through puberty, and they stink at sports. And all of a sudden, they grow up and they grow 8 inches. And next thing you know, little Johnny's the stud on the team from being the benchwarmer. But it is different than when Jeff and I played, and Jeff's a little bit older than I am, where the training these kids do in high school now, I didn't train that well when I was in college. And we had good training and good strength coaches, but it's evolved in the technology and the advancement of studying how to train has gone so far, and it's just pushed its way down to the younger generation.
A question for you, and you both seen high school football here, and you played in Virginia, you played in Colorado. Is the caliber of high school football in Florida?
I played in Colorado, yeah.
Right.
Oh, I thought you said California.
No, I'm sorry. Colorado.
Yeah.
And Virginia. Is the caliber of high school football here, because of the year-round, because of the focus, because of the zeal for it, is it that much better than where you guys play?
It's better because there's better athletes here.
Okay.
Or more of them.
Yeah, there's more people to choose from. You know, it's better and there's more emphasis put on it. Is it because it's a year-round thing? No.
I'll say this. My son, he's 14. He'll be 15 before school year starts this next coming up year. In August, is better at football and knows more and is and stronger than I was when I was his age.
How much of that is you, though? I mean, you didn't have you as your father.
I actually try to stay out of it a little bit. I mean,
you can't help it.
No, I can't help it. But I think maybe a little bit, but it's also because of the ability to go work out. And, I mean, I remember in ninth grade as a rising sophomore, I would go mess around at the high school because I was going to go there and try to play football next year. My cousin was a year older, and I was supposed to be lifting weights or working out. But there was no supervision. We'd go in there and jack around and throw balls and go shoot hoops, but there was no structured workout. Andrew, who's going to be a ninth grader, they have summer workouts 4 days a week with coaches there monitoring how they lift, making sure they're doing the right technique, not putting too much weight on, not hurting themselves, running. I mean, it's like there was none of that. I mean, I don't know for you. I mean,
we had it.
Did you?
Yeah, we actually had a full-fledged weight room.
Yeah, I mean, we had a weight room, but there was there was nothing like that. I mean,
it wasn't super structured.
There was no structure.
But we had supervision. Yeah. You know, the high school football.
Oh, there was
coach,
a supervision.
Ed
make sure
Scott
you
was there every night, every day. You know, it was open for a window, and that way he didn't have his whole
day
wasted in the summertime. But yeah, and in our high school, you know, Sterling, Virginia, which wasn't a very big town, we actually had a full-blown weight room.
Yeah. We had a small one, but I think you can go overboard. There's balance and everything.
Sure.
I mean, you can go overboard in some of these. And you know, the thing is really where it becomes overboard is the parents.
And here's my story. You know, my kids played last year for the first time. And so this year I put my oldest in a spring league. It was an 8-on-8 spring league, which is kind of a new. And it was so intense that I pulled my son out because I realized I was wearing him out. I'm just trying to get his skills, right? Because it was his first year. He's a sixth grader. I figured he could. It was too intense. I mean, it was all about winning in the spring. And I said, this is, you know, let's wait till the fall.
Yeah.
Let's go do some other things.
It's a big deal. Sports are a big deal. I mean, not just in Florida, but all over kids' sports. I mean, baseball, football. I mean, heck, there's basketball leagues. It's a big deal. And a lot of it is because as parents, we think our kids next greatest thing. We love our kids more than anybody else, and we want the best for them and try to give them the best opportunity. And sometimes just, you know, my motto is, and where as long as they enjoy it and are
let them have fun.
Final
thought on
fun.
This. Final thought on this. If it was you, right? I mean, if your parents could identify my son's going to play major college football and has NFL potential, would you still take the multidimensional approach and develop all those skills, or would you be more willing to put them into a program, you know, that will specifically build those skill sets so that they can get the college scholarship?
At what age?
14. How old your son is?
Multidimensional. More sports.
At 14, the best thing my son can do is lift weights, play football. Go play basketball. If you're not going to play for the high school, go play at a YMCA. Run around.
So regardless if he's a good athlete or you can see special, and you're going to take the same
approach. Go on the track team. Go throw the shot, the disc. Right. Get out there. Be outside. Run around. Get athletic.
Yeah.
That's going to make you better at football.
Okay. All right. Let's get back to the NFL. I mean, although it's fascinating, but a lot of people who listen to the show have kids, and they want, you know, they want to hear what you think about it.
I'm
anyway.
Glad that we talked about it because, you know, Tony, I'm sure you get the same thing, but I get a lot of questions from parents of kids that, you know, are getting into athletics and ask me questions about, you know, how they should go about, you know, letting their kid play certain sports, or should they play many sports? Should they just focus in on one sport? I mean, we get that question all the time, so to broach that topic on the radio show, I think it's a great idea.
And I think it is, because I think you get the question, you know, my kid wants to be an NFL player, what'd you do? You know, here's my advice to parents. I didn't do anything. He was 6'1" or whatever. he was just like, I played because I enjoyed it. I was okay. I didn't really get really good until high school. And because everyone matures different, but I did it because I enjoyed it.
Right. So make it fun for your
kids.
Make
it fun. But I'm also a proponent, and it's a rule in our house. I mean, my kid will do something.
Yes.
You know, if I had to do football year-round, you know, if my parents had pushed me into that, I bet you I would have quit.
You know, that's what I saw in Keegan with this spring league, and that's why I pulled him, because I could tell that he wasn't enjoying it.
Yeah,
and
I
was so scared.
I bet you I would have quit.
I was so scared that he wouldn't want to play, and because of what I do, I want him to be involved in football. I'll tell you the one rule we have, and that is that academics have to be in line. I'm sure you're the same way.
Oh, yeah.
And so when people ask my advice, what should I tell my kid? Get good grades. Because if you have good grades and you're a good athlete, you write your own ticket. If you're a good athlete and you don't have good grades, it becomes a problem.
Yeah.
So make sure that you get the grades.
Yeah, because when I was growing up as a kid, I liked football. I didn't love it.
Yeah.
I mean, I love baseball. God, I love baseball.
Do you still?
Oh, playing it? Yeah. Watching it? No.
Okay.
You know, I want to watch
watching
football.
It.
I like
your
watching the playoffs.
Right? I love it. Okay. I love baseball. I had to quit after when I was 14, though.
But if I was pushed into, like, you know, the spring football thing and all that,
would have worn you out.
I probably would have just said I've had enough at some point and said I'm not going to do it this time.
Right.
You know, so the exposure to all
it
stuff
is
good.
And it is hard. I mean, I even see it with my oldest. And he's good at football, but he gets worn out. And I tell him his option is, I say, you can go get a full-time job then.
A full-time job at 14?
I worked. I don't know about you.
No, I did too.
During the summers, I worked. I was mowing lawns. I had to go down to McDonald's and work for my dad. I mean, it was...
Did that too.
I mean, there was no sitting. I tell my kids, I said, I don't care. I don't know what the
rest... I think it's the term full-time. That
oh, yeah. But no, you're going to go do something.
Yeah.
You're not going to sit around and hang out in the summer. They think I'm crazy, but...
Joe, do you make your cats do anything?
Yeah, no. They need to go out and work.
Just laying it out there. The only guy who doesn't have kids in the room is probably sitting back and laughing a little bit.
All right, so...
Let's talk briefly. We have 2 minutes.
Just briefly,
Jeff, go through the schedule. What's coming up for the players?
For the next couple weeks, this week and next week, the rookies will be in here working out. But really, they only had them for a week, because I think the NFL's rookie symposium starts next week. So really, the team only gets them for 1 week and maybe a day or two, and then they take off the rookie symposium. And there's nothing structured beyond that for the rookies. And in all the veterans, they can come in and work out on their own and have safety supervision in the weight room. But it can't go beyond that. We talked about the disappointment in the new CBA prior to the start of the OTAs and the mini camps, to where, you know, the quarterback couldn't come in here and talk to the offensive coordinator or the quarterback's coach and get the playbook. You couldn't go out on the field and talk about fundamentals. We're back into that stage again. You know, the coaches aren't allowed on the field with players now. And also, that's kind of hard to stomach, is that if Blaine Gabbert or Chad Henne or Jordan Palmer want to grab a couple guys and go out to the Jaguars practice field and throw the ball, they can't do that.
You got to go to high school.
That's the dumbest thing that I have ever heard.
You know, the other thing I don't like is I'm fine with them not letting the – I think if a player wants to go out and work out with players, he should do it wherever he wants. I mean, he works here as an NFL. I'm fine with them saying a dead period where coaches can't –
no coaches, absolutely.
I'm fine with that. What I don't like, which I think would be beneficial for the young guys, I think a club should be able to have the rookies as long as they want all the way up to training camp and give them whatever time they want to or not off. Because I think the best place a rookie could be is working out, getting acclimated, not having a bunch of free time with – I mean, just that transition's hard. And I think – I mean, I'm not saying they should be here every day until training camp, but I don't understand why you would want to limit your staff with your young players that would give them the best chance of making an NFL team and also probably the – in that transition period, the best place they can be.
Do you suppose the players and the Players Association will go back and revisit this? Because it's in the players' best interest in many cases, isn't it?
Well, you know, Brian, the way things are going now with the relationship between the league and the Players Association, especially with, you know, it's really getting highlighted now with this bounty gate.
I don't think there's any
love.
It's
not looking good.
There's no love lost between the two right now.
There's, you know, and I, boy, last year at this time or when the lockout ended,
We were all hugging each other and everything?
We were, you know, 10 years of labor peace. This is going to be fantastic. You know, the partnership going forward hadn't even lasted a year.
No.
You know, and then.
Well, the bounty.
But it started before then.
No, I know it did. There's a bunch
of. You know, the acrimony that has generated within the first year, that needs to be fixed. You know, and I don't know what it's going to take to get fixed. Is it going to take Roger Goodell to take some lumps on his head maybe in this bounty gate thing, which he may take maybe? Is it going to maybe take DeMaurice Smith to get the can
and get
somebody
in
else in leadership there
Gene
for the
Upshaw's
players?
Approach.
Yeah, I mean, whatever it's going to take, there's got to be a smoother road to take for these two entities to coexist because it should be a smooth road.
All right, folks. We'll talk to you next week. Jaguars this week. Have a great night, everybody.
WOK.